Hello, thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit biteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Mike Anthony. He is the author of Love, Dad, How My Father Died and Told Me He Didn't. Love, Dad intimately shares one family's darkest hours and their road to healing, a road that has been long ignored or scoffed at by the scientific community. Mike Anthony, a healthy skeptic, goes to great lengths to uncover the paradigm-shifting research into the nature of consciousness that exists, and shows us why it must be put back into the forefront with no shame attached. Love, Dad details Mike's true story as he pulls himself out of despair and, alongside his family, finds true connection and communication with his dad once again. Given the transformative nature of the experience, he couldn't help but share what happened, hoping to bring others the peace that he had discovered. So compelling that a story that is so compelling, the story that Netflix chose to feature it in 3 episodes of their series, Surviving Death. You can find out more about Mike and the book by visiting his website, which is www.MikeAnthony.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Mike to the show. Good day, Mike.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure.
Hi, Robert. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to chatting with you today. I liked your appearance in the Netflix series. We'll talk about that later, but that was great. So, one of the things I really want to start with first is that, would you mind sharing with the listeners just a little bit about who your dad was, or the essence of your dad?
Sure, yeah. My dad was an extraordinarily kind man. He was just not your average human being. I tell the story in the book that when I was a kid, he felt so different than everyone else to me, that when in catechism, you know, we started to learn about angels, and it struck me that my dad had all of the attributes that these angels have,
wow.
These sort of all loving beings. And one morning, I have this very clear memory, my dad was making his one and only dish, his French toast, and I decided to ask him, and I said, "Dad, are you an angel? You know, just tell me the truth. I promise your secret will be safe with me. Are you an angel?" And he said, "You know, what do you mean?" And I said, "Well, you're just so nice to everybody all the time." And he said, "Oh, well, you know, you should always try to be nice," which I was sure was exactly what an angel in disguise would tell me. And, you know, he would have fit in perfectly well had he been born on a mountain somewhere, you know, maybe in Tibet, living a life as a monk in meditation. He had this energy about him that was just so calming, and no matter what chaos might be happening in the world, I was a very sensitive kid, and I was sort of, you know, maybe somewhat empathic in that when things were happening in the world that were painful, things that were causing hurt to other people, I sometimes felt viscerally the pain that people were in, and I had a real hard time with that. So much so that I had to, throughout my life, I've had to try to work on kind of blocking that out just so that I could live a useful life at times, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, yes, indeed, yeah. But anytime I was feeling anything like that, you know, wondering why in the world, if there is a God, would that God put such terrible ingredients into the mix? If I was having any of those doubts, just being around my father would clear that away. Something about his energy was so peaceful and loving, and knowing that the universe had something like my dad in it gave me enough faith to accept that there were things in the universe that did not make sense to me.
What video they showed of him, he looked just like a really nice guy, you know. So you and he were close throughout your life?
Very close. Yeah, we were. My whole family is pretty tight knit. My mom and dad got divorced when they were very young. They met when they were 12 and 13 years old, and then they got married right out of high school, pretty much, and then got divorced just after having me when they were still just in their early 20s. But they ended up remaining friends throughout their lives, so much so that my dad ended up buying a house right around the corner from my mom and her new husband's house. So we've always been incredibly tight.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing when that can work out like that. That's conscious parenting before there was a term for it.
Right.
What would you say the effect his? Well, first of all, let's talk about his passing and the circumstances around it. Tell us about that.
Sure. Yeah, my dad was 60 years old, but he was a very young 60. You know, he was in great shape as far as we knew. He appeared to be in fantastic shape. He worked as a delivery driver for FedEx, which is a very active job, you know, and he would play basketball in the yard with his grandkids with no problem. I had recently moved into a new apartment in New York City, you know, and he was moving refrigerators and couches and things up and down these two stories with, you know, these tight stairways with no problem at all. I mean, we really thought that if anyone in my family had a chance to make it to 100, it was going to be my dad. So his death came, from our perspective, completely out of the blue. It was an utter shock. My dad and I were watching football, a Monday night football game together one night, and had this fantastic, spirited conversation. And then he left the house, drove around the corner 5 minutes to his house, went inside and died. He still had his keys in his hands, you know, so that's how quickly, whatever it was, we didn't do an autopsy. So we're assuming, you know, some sort of major cardiac event, something very quick.
Yeah, boy, yeah, that's, when that kind of thing happens, it really draws your attention to just how, you know, temporary, you know, or you know, just how things can happen in a moment's time. So how would you say that your family being close grieved? So can you tell us a little bit about you know, the effect that his passing had on you, your family?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, it was completely devastating. You know, at the very beginning, I was in complete shock. I had gotten the phone call. My day job is working as a bartender for Broadway, and I was working at a show on Broadway, and intermission was just about to happen, and the phone call came in. It was my sister, and she's wailing on the phone, screaming, you know, he's gone, he's gone, he's gone. And my mom, I hear my mom screaming in the background as well. And I was worried, you know, their pain was so extreme. I was worried that they were going to die on the spot as well. And I have this very clear memory. I hang up the phone and then intermission happens. And, you know, on Broadway, you suddenly have 1,000 people who want their drinks. And I have this memory of making drinks for this woman. You know, I'm pouring her a rum and coke and saying, how's the show? Are you enjoying the show? You know, like it's any other night. I just went into utter shock. But when it set in that he was gone, when the first time I went to pick up my phone to call him and realized that was now impossible, it was complete and utter devastation. It's hard to come up with what the right words are for it, but it was a crisis. I would call it a spiritual and eventually just a full-on existential crisis, because if someone as wonderful as my dad, you know, who was full of nothing but love and goodness, and if every idea he ever had and joy he ever felt, if everything that he ever was could suddenly disappear as though it had been this almost instantaneous blip on the universe's infinite radar of time and space, if that could just be gone, then a real hard time. I was struggling to understand what the point to anything could be. You know, that's how it struck me. If someone like my dad could just be wiped off the face of existence, it was hard to. It was hard to find a reason to get out of bed and keep going. I mean, it was that level of devastation for a while there.
Wow. It's, you know, trying to make sense, you know, and, you know, especially whenever it's sudden and unexpected, not that it's any, you know, easier necessarily if you know, like, if someone is kind of sick for a while, but just that suddenness can really throw you, you know, for a loop. And one of the things is you write about in your books is you talk about your dad's body in the casket. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it was the most bizarre and odd sight of my life when I walked into the room at the funeral home and saw his body sitting there. You know, it was so not my dad. It was just not my father. That thing that I was looking at was a collection of molecules. You know, it was a collection of atoms that were not my dad. And it struck me, you know, that before I became an actor and, you know, bartender and this sort of thing, I had intended to be a science teacher. You know, I've always loved science. And I knew that if I had a strong enough microscope with me and I put my dad's body under a microscope, it would look exactly the same right now in that casket as it would have looked a few days before when he was alive. You know, he was made up of the very same parts. The exact same atoms were still in that body. So what was it that had given those atoms their sense of dadness, right? What was it that had made them alive? I couldn't let go of the idea that how could it be that simply a heart no longer beating could make that big of a difference? It was just a real bizarre sight.
Yeah. Now, I'm not a fan of casket. those kinds of things. But, when that life essence is gone, you know, and it's, you know, one of those things, and it's, like you say, it's so dramatic, you know, that, you know, even someone who's a scientist has to wonder, I mean, about, you know, the significance of the difference. And again, you know, like you said, you know, from a microscope, under a microscope, it's all the same. There's that key difference.
Yeah, very key difference. I mean, it's night and day, right? Obviously, it's there's a night and day difference, and you know, of course, science says that you know, Einstein figured out that energy can't be created or destroyed, right? So this is something that scientists will often talk about. That obviously there is some energy. Now, energy is a word that we throw around a lot, right? But in truth, we don't really know what that means, right? Even our scientists, if we start to talk about the fundamentals of how the universe works, you know, we used to think that atoms were the smallest things, bits of matter, right? That had physical properties. Mm-hmm. And now we know there are quarks. And now beyond quarks, it's entirely theoretical. And one of the main theories is string theory, right? That postulates that it's vibrating strings of energy, and it's the rate of the vibration of the string that gives the atom its physical qualities and changes how it interacts with everything else around it. And if that turns out to be true, that it's vibrating strings of energy, what is making the string vibrate? That we have no idea. There's no answer for why that string should be vibrating in the first place, or where in the world that string came from, right? You know, we have all of these theories, but there's no solid answer on that. So, even to science, it's an open question, I think. You know, death is still confusing to science, exactly what death is.
Yeah, my goodness. So now you've decided, I mean, obviously you moved into investigating life after death. So can you tell us about, how that spark began?
Yeah, not long after my father died, just about 2 days or so after burying him, a phone call came into my mom's house from my second cousin's husband. And this was very odd because this is not a person that my mom was close with. I could not even remember who he was when she told me the story. And she answered the phone one night and he said, "Liz, this is Chris. Do you remember me?" And she said, "Oh, yeah, Chris." You know, I think they maybe had been at a wedding together 10 or 15 years before. And he said, "You know, I know this is going to sound strange, calling out of the blue like this," and he had never called our house before. And he said, "But do you know what I do?" And she said, "No." You know, as far as we knew, Chris was, and still to this day, he's a hospital administrator. So he has like a big-time sort of straight-laced job in hospital administration. But she said, "No." And he said, "Well, on the weekends, I'm part of a ghost hunting team." And she said, "Okay." And at this point, she's completely baffled about what this phone call could possibly be about. But as it turns out, Chris, who, he says now that at that time in his life, he was still in the quote-unquote paranormal closet because he had this sort of very big-time job. And he did not want to take the chance of letting his colleagues know that on the weekends, he goes to quote-unquote haunted houses and tries to contact, dead spirits or spirits. So anyway, on his team, he has a medium, which is, a person who claims the ability to communicate in some way with our deceased loved ones. And he said that this medium, who never met my dad, by the way, she was a complete stranger to my dad and my entire family, as they are investigating this house one night, she says, "I have this spirit here named Robert, and I don't know that he's connected to this house that we're in, but he is not leaving me alone. He is desperate to get a message to his family." And then she said to Chris, "I think this is connected somehow maybe to you or your family, Chris. His name's Robert, and his family is involved with a fish restaurant." And when she said that, Chris put it together. My dad's name is Robert, and my sister owns a fish restaurant. So even though he was not at all close with my dad, and I don't know that they ever even met in life, he was aware through the family grapevine that this guy had died. So the message was so insistent from my father, according to this medium, her name was Christina, that Chris, even though it was very awkward for him to make this phone call, I mean, I imagine the poor guy trying to, struggling with whether or not to make this call. He has no idea how the family's going to react to this kind of thing. But my dad was apparently being so insistent that he made the call. And so that's how the idea of mediumship was kind of thrust into my family's life. You know, most people seek out mediumship if they're going to be involved in mediumship in their grieving, and they seek it out. In our case, it came to our door. So that is what began my research into this, because the scientific part of my mind, though I, of course, desperately wanted to believe that, yes, my disembodied father had contacted this woman named Christina to get this message to us. I mean, I wanted to believe nothing more than that. I was going to need a lot of evidence before I could believe something like that. So I spoke with this woman. I ended up getting her phone number after speaking with my cousin for a long time and coming to the conclusion he seemed like a very rational guy. He seemed very sane. Despite his ghost hunting, antics. And then this woman, after I spoke with her, it was clear to me right away that she seemed to be just a very kind, compassionate, and intelligent woman who did not, I detected no deception of any kind, people ask me all the time, well, how much money did you pay this woman? There was never any financial restitution for this. No money was ever exchanged, ever asked for. I mean, it was not even a question. This woman was entirely doing this because she felt she had a responsibility to this guy, to this spirit, to do that. So that was very intriguing. And I talked with my family about it after I had this conversation with Christina. And I said, I don't know. You know, she seems like an entirely sane woman. So that was neat. And then the following day, my sister is driving to work. And just by chance, on the radio, we live in Connecticut, she happens to have on a station called 95.7, and there's a segment on with someone who calls herself a professional evidential medium, and she's giving readings to people who are calling into the radio station. So the timing of that, my sister found very interesting, right? I mean, this was quite a coincidence to have this phone call come in. Then I have this conversation with this woman, and now she just happens to hear on the radio about this woman who lives here in Connecticut who does this stuff for a living. So my sister contacted her and set up a reading, and that's where the story really sort of kicks off.
Yeah, and look where it led to. It's a long path from that point. It is unusual, you know. I mean, I've known quite a few mediums in my years of doing the show, and you know they don't often, you know, unless they get a really strong kind of a strong sense, you know, to do something that, you know, I think most kind of allow people to come to them. You know, and let that be the route to go. Because like you say, you just never know what the reactions will be of the person. And when you think about all of the decisions that had to be made, you know, to this point, I mean, the cousin connection, you know, and the fish, and then getting to you, you know, and then from you, and then your sister, you know, here on the radio. I mean, there are just so many. I have found that when, you know, there is a path to be followed, that will quite often get very reinforcing messages that, you know, pay attention, pay attention.
Yes, I agree. I mean, when I look back at this whole story now, and there's a lot to it, you know, there's more to it, but it certainly feels like, I mean, when you look at the dominoes that had to fall over to lead to where I ended up getting to, it's now, for me, impossible to not see my dad pulling strings outside of his body, pulling strings to somehow make this stuff happen. Impossible to not see that.
Yeah, I mean, when you figure he had to, you know, go in a very roundabout way, you know, to get
right
to you, you know, so a bit of determination. You eventually... When you were obviously you're thrown into this mediumship world, and what's your approach now? I mean, is it, you know, investigating mediums or is it just learning about them? What, tell us about that that process.
Sure. What happened is after my sister hired this professional, quote unquote, professional medium to come to the house, I tested her by giving her a code word. I talked to my dad that day before the woman came to the house. And I said, okay, Dad, I need you to give me a very specific message if I'm going to believe that any of this is true. And I was suddenly flooded with this memory that when we were kids, as I said, my parents got divorced when we were young, and we saw my dad on the weekend. So on Friday nights when we went to see him, we were so excited we couldn't get to sleep at night. So he would play with our hair to help us fall asleep. And we'd say, you know, five more minutes, Dad, five more minutes. And it became a thing that my poor father would have to play with our hair until his hand was ready to, you know, fall off and we were deep asleep. So I'm suddenly flooded for whatever reason with that memory that I hadn't thought of in a long time. And I said, okay, Dad, this is the thing. I need you to get this medium to mention my hair. In some way, she has to mention my hair. If she doesn't do that, it doesn't matter what else she says. I'm not going to believe that this is real. And another important thing to mention about this is that my hair is entirely average, right? It's short, brown, average hair. There's nothing about it you would look at and think, oh, there's got to be a story about this guy, too. You know, it's just totally average. So she comes to the house a couple of hours later, and she is saying things that are so specific that within minutes I'm looking around the house thinking, you know, did we leave pictures up here that she could be getting this information from? How is she doing this? Information was coming through that was not published anywhere, nothing that she could have read in an obituary. You know, some of it was highly personal stuff. So within a half an hour, we are all weeping, right? There are seven of us sitting in the living room of my mom's house, and we're now drenched in our own tears because we're convinced that something genuine is happening here. And I completely forgot about my code word, by the way, because I was so taken by what she was doing that I really could not, my mind, the scientific part of my brain was totally reeling at that point. Reeling. Like, how could this be? You know, I was thinking, if this is real, how is it that it has escaped our attention? How is it that my biology professor in college, right after teaching me about, you know, cell division and mitosis, did not say, oh, and by the way, there is also evidence that some human brains are able to communicate that is no longer in a body. You know, I couldn't understand that if this was real, I had not been taught about it before. So all of that's going on. We're all crying. And if this woman was somehow, which I couldn't fathom how, but if she had somehow been faking this, right, and she was a con woman, you know when to not push your luck, right? You know when you've had a successful con. All of these weeping fools sitting here in this living room, they're all going to leave here and tell everybody they know about the most amazing night of their lives, and you're going to get so much work out of this, right? So you know when to wrap up and leave. But instead, as we're getting ready to go, you know, we're like putting on her coat and stuff and thanking her, telling her outright that this was the most extraordinary experience we'd ever had. She's in the middle of a sentence. She stopped talking and apropos of nothing, completely tangentially, she looked at me, right at me, and said, "Your dad wants to talk about your hair?" Just like that. And it was like someone had punched me in the stomach, in that the wind was taken out. I couldn't breathe for a second. That's how shocked I was at what she had just said to me and the way that she said it. It was in that moment, to my mind, there was no other reasonable explanation beyond it was actually my father. Right. Actually heard me talking to him, and he somehow got this message to that woman. So in that moment, you know, a crack had happened in me. You know, it was like a shattering event, but in a good way. My dad's passing was shattering in one way that was very awful. This was like a shattering that expanded my awareness and the possibilities. So I couldn't let it go. It completely changed my life. And so a year later, I called that woman back, the medium. And I said, you know, I doubt you'll remember me, but I had an experience that was completely blew open my mind. And I would like to make a documentary about what you claim that you're doing. And I'd like to sit you down in front of a camera, press record on that camera, and then walk complete strangers into the room and see if you can do what you did when I know there is absolutely no way you could be cheating, when I know there's no way you would have had any time to Google anything or hire private detectives to follow people or anything of that nature. Would you let me do that? And immediately this woman accepted that offer. She immediately said, sure, I'll do that. And that's what I began to do. And so in the book, I compile the statistics from 10 of the readings that we did, again, all on camera. And again, in every case, no one knew who the sitter was going to be that day except me. So that effectively rules out any cheating, at least in conventional ways. And now I've done up to 20 readings with this woman. And I was astounded to find that person after person, she was getting the same kind of information that she had gotten that night with us. She was getting these specific things. She changed these people's lives, 10 out of 10 people that I detail in the book. Every single one of them believed that she was somehow doing something quote unquote paranormal, even though some of them were real skeptics and would not say, yes, I believe she was definitely talking to my dead daughter, for instance, but I do believe she was somehow getting information in a way that I can't explain. So that was, it was paradigm shifting information, because the mainstream scientific materialist paradigm, right, the one that is taught in universities all over the land right now, is that there is no such thing as life after death, that consciousness, that what we perceive of as self is just an illusion created by chemical reactions in the brain. And when the oxygen stops flowing to the brain and those reactions stop happening, then that sense of self dissolves away, and that collection of chemicals that we thought of as a person, that I thought of as my dad, that illusion that I thought of as my dad, is gone forever. You know, that's the mainstream paradigm. But what I was seeing day after day on the set totally destroyed that paradigm. It went against it completely. And that was astounding to me. And, so then I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm an actor and a bartender, right? I am not the person who should be dealing with one of the most profound questions that could face a human being, which is, what happens after we die. There should be smarter people out there with much higher IQs who are looking into this stuff. And then I was surprised to find that there have been many scientists, some of them of renown, who have looked into this and have come away with the same conclusion that I was getting making this movie, and that is that some people, without a doubt, are able to get information in some anomalous way that science cannot yet currently explain. And, studies have been going on into mediumship for over 100 years now. Of course, mediumship sort of was having its heyday back in the end of the 1800s, early 1900s. And some of the brightest minds of the day, like a guy named William James, for instance, a lot of people have heard about, who is considered to be the founder of psychology. He founded the psychology department at Harvard University. No less than Harvard University. And he studied a woman named Lenora Piper, a medium who lived in New Hampshire. And after two decades of rigorous research into this woman, I mean, he left no stone unturned. It was clear to him that it was unequivocal, right? There was not a gray area. She was doing something that was quote-unquote paranormal. She was getting information in some anomalous way that we have not understood, that we do not understand the pathway for as of yet, as far as scientifically anyway, we don't understand the pathway. And the research goes on to this day, and there are modern studies that have been done at the University of Arizona, the University of Virginia. Currently, there's studies going on with a fantastic scientist. Her name is Dr. Julie Beischel. And she's doing research out of the Winbridge Research Center in Arizona. And she has gotten, she's doing quintuple blind experiments with mediums, which wow. Basically means they have ruled out any medium cheating. They've ruled it out, right, in the experimental protocol. And they're still getting the same results. These people are still able to get information at a rate that is statistically higher than they should be able to achieve by any mode of chance. So again, according to Dr. Julie Beischel, who's much more brilliant than I am, people should check out her work. According to her, it's also unequivocal that what she calls anomalous information reception, meaning simply that the information is coming in some unknown way, definitely does happen.
Yeah. I had scientist Russell Targ on my show, gosh, probably yes. Now about 6-7 years ago. And Yeah, he to me, you know, in his book The Reality of ESP, he just, you know, that scientific approach, you know, to investigating, you know, I just loved how he did that, you know, because it begins to show there could be a marriage between the two, you know, and
yes.
Yeah, and we're going to take just a real quick break, Mike, because we stream live, and I do want to invite listeners, if you want to call in with any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359, and those listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to post them there. And then right before we go, I will say one thing. An actor and a bartender is a perfect person to go ahead and bring forth that kind of, I mean, when you look about the actor playing to the audience and the bartender's, you know, conciliatory kind of state of being and handing out the drink just for them, I mean, hey, I think that's a perfect combo. So anyway, we're going to take a quick break, and everybody, we'll be right back.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,400 shows we have had over the past 9 years. Also on the site is a link to the products and services we provide, books, photography, a wellness store, and self-publishing assistance. Our show is a free podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can subscribe for free on any of those platforms by using the links on our website homepage. We are on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc. And we also have buttons to those platforms at the top of our homepage. Our website, biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my special guest is Mike Anthony, and we're talking about his book, Love, Dad, How My Father Died, Then Told Me He Didn't. Again, you can find out more by visiting his website, which is www.mikeanthony.com. And also, if you do have Netflix, definitely check out the series Surviving Death. You'll enjoy that as well. Okay, with that, we're back, Mike.
Hi, Robert.
Hi, great. Okay, so in the introduction, I described you as a healthy skeptic. And where are you now on the skeptical? And you know, what would you say to some? What has changed for you? How's your skepticism changed? And what would you say to those who are maybe where you were prior to these experiences?
Well, the word skeptic, I write a little bit about in the book what I mean by that. And I think skepticism is just what science is in my mind, right? Just simply meaning that we need evidence before we believe something, right? But once the evidence is there, we accept it, right? The issue that I have and the issue that I believe has kept so much of this information from reaching the mainstream are the debunkers. These are people who tend to have made a decision often without even doing the research, right? They have a predetermined belief, right? It's a belief, just like a belief in something. You can believe that something is not true. And, you know, that's the problem. That's the issue that I have, are people who have concluded a priori that something is impossible. And because it's impossible, it cannot happen, right? I mean, I literally had a scientist say to me, this cannot be because it cannot be. And that, of course, makes no sense, right? The job of science, science is a method, right? It's what we're supposed to do is observe something happen in the natural world and then try to get to the bottom of what it is that we saw. And but the first step to that is accepting that we saw it, right? We have to at least accept that it's happening before we can begin to study it any further. And a lot of people within the mainstream science, you know, university scientific community, just simply do not even look at this information. They just don't even know that it's there a lot of times. The word paranormal has become a dirty word in academic communities. Yeah. You know, if you're a scientist who is respected, you're taking a real chance if you tell your university, hey, I want to do a study into mediumship. You know, for some people, that's academic suicide because it's painted with such an ugly brush as being unserious business, right? Only unserious people would look into mediumship. Now, that is silly because you mentioned Russell Targ before the break and work that he did with Hal Puthoff at the Stanford Research Institute, SRI, right. Mm-hmm. is phenomenal research, right, into ESP. And the CIA has recently declassified a lot of these documents, so anyone is free to go to the CIA website and look through their library. And you can see for yourself that the CIA concluded, after spending millions of dollars researching this, they concluded that extrasensory perception is indeed a real phenomenon. Not only is it real, the United States government has used it. They have used what they call remote viewers, which is basically clairvoyance, someone who's able to see something that, you know, with something other than their eyes. It could be across the room. It could be hidden inside of a lead box, you know. So the United States has used it operationally, extrasensory perception and remote viewing. So the United States government has concluded, after millions of dollars of research, that it's a real thing. So where I am now, having witnessed what I've witnessed, and it ends up going beyond mental mediumship, I end the book with a chapter that I actually hesitated to put in because it's going to be so beyond what the average reader considers to be possible that I worried they'd get to the end of the book and think, oh, my God, I spent all of this time. Turns out this guy is just crazy. But I, you know, I kept it in because it is the absolute truth. I promise you it is the absolute truth. And just to touch on it a bit, mediumship we can break down into two categories, mental mediumship and physical mediumship. And mental mediumship is the one that, you know, we're largely familiar with. John Edward, you know, crossing over, the Long Island medium, the people that I've been working with who are in a conscious state. And they say that they're getting messages in various forms that they're then interpreting and delivering to us. That's mental mediumship. In physical mediumship, it's said that the medium goes into a very deep trance, so deep, in fact, that they claim they have no memory of what happens while they're in that trance. Some of this we can verify with science. If we we've used electroencephalograms, EEG machines on some physical mediums. So we hook their brain up to this monitoring equipment. And we do know, for instance, a guy named Stuart Alexander, who is the medium that I had my personal experience with, my personal completely life-changing experience with, he's been tested with an EEG machine. And sure enough, when he goes into trance, his brainwave pattern changes, and he goes from beta waves, or what we typically what we would call waking consciousness. You know, what's typically happening mm-hmm. in our brain on a day-to-day basis. And when he goes into a deep trance, he moves into into alpha and delta waves, which are not waking consciousness. It's something else. So we know that at least that much, you know, is happening scientifically. And then the claim is that once they're in this deep state of trance, the spirit world, what they say is the spirit world, can then use the medium's body, use their physical apparatus, including their vocal cords, to speak directly to us. So the medium is not, you know, a middle person at this point. The spirit world is supposedly speaking directly to us. using their own words. And in the most advanced forms of this mediumship, as crazy as this might sound to some people, depending on, you know, where they are on the spectrum of this stuff, in the most advanced forms of this, the spirit world is said to be able to extract a substance from the medium's body called ectoplasm, and then use that substance to physically materialize in the room in a way that everyone in the room sees what's happening. So this is not subjective in nature. This is an objective physical thing that is happening in the room for all to perceive at the same time. And, you know, I first read about this in Leslie Kane's book. Leslie Kane wrote a book called Surviving Death, and that's what the Netflix series is based on. And when I got to the word ectoplasm, I mean, I had to stifle a laugh. I was sitting at a Barnes & Noble reading this, and, you know, I was sure that ectoplasm was a word coined by Harold Ramis and Ghostbusters. You know, I was certain that ectoplasm was the stuff that, that Slimer left on the bookshelves at the New York Public Library in the movie. But as it turns out, according to Leslie, it's a real substance. And not only is it real, but it was the word was coined by a guy named Charles Roche, who won the Nobel Prize in Physiology. He won the Nobel Prize in the study of the human body. And he is the person who came to the conclusion after a great deal of study into physical mediumship, that ectoplasm is a real substance. Not only that, he was able to take some of it out of a seance room and take it to a lab and look at it under a microscope. It is a real substance. And I can now say that it is a real substance with confidence because I have seen it myself. And this is my big secret that I, you know, I still, anytime I'm out in public, if I'm talking with someone at a coffee shop about my story, every time I get to the word ectoplasm, I kind of whisper and look over my shoulder to see who's looking. But, that is my big secret. Leslie Kane and I, were sitting together in a room in England, and, I saw this substance, this amorphous substance, very difficult to describe in words. Of course, I go into detail in this in the book. The story is told fully there. But I saw a human hand form out of nothing, right in front of my face. And when I say right in front of my face, I mean it. I was 5 inches from where this was happening.
Wow.
And I watched this hand shake Leslie's hand. Leslie could feel the bones in the hand. She could feel the warmth of it, the flesh. And then I watched her let go of that hand, and then I watched it dissolve into smoke, into nothing, and then disappear right in front of my face. So you asked where I am now as far as skepticism goes. I now know without a doubt that no matter how many Nobel Prizes a person has, if they tell me that there's no such thing as anything paranormal, I now know with 100% certainty that they are incorrect about that.
Yeah. Well, that certainly gets you to that spectrum. I don't think very many people have gotten the ectoplasm experience. The one thing that it seems that is that paradigm shifting, that mind changer, is that personal experience. I mean, I've had so many professional, you know, doctors, actors, you know, and different types of professions who, you know, this was like nothing on their radar, you know, until it happened personally. And then all of a sudden it kind of shakes it up. For some people I think there can always be some people whose beliefs are so set that there's just not going to be able to allow this into that, you know, into their world, you know, and that's fine. You know, that's kind of where they're at, and, you know, God bless them, there's, you know, it is shifting, but, you know, just the idea, like, for example, you had to kind of whisper ectoplasm when you're talking about the story.
Right.
You know, there still is that judgment out there that is just, it just seems hard to shake. But I guess, you know, it's happening, you know, 1, 2, 3, you know, instances at a time. You know, hopefully we'll get to a turning point, you know, that where it'll be, you won't have to whisper anymore.
Right. Yeah, that's my main goal now is just doing what I can to shake the shame that people feel about just having an interest into looking into this stuff. There should be no shame attached to this. You know, I talked a lot with Dr. Jim Tucker at the University of Virginia, who studies children who have memories of what appear to be previous lives. And this data is just stunning. You know, they've been, the Division of Perceptual Studies has been involved in this research for almost 60 years now. And you know, the evidence is so strong that JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, which is one of the most respected scientific journals in the world, right? Anytime JAMA publishes a report related to diet, it's on the nightly news, right? If JAMA finds out that saturated fat in eggs is not as bad for us as we thought it is, you know, it's published in headlines that, oh, eggs are not as bad as we thought they were. But when the book editor for the Journal of the American Medical Association read Dr. Ian Stevenson's book, that's the guy who founded the Division of Perceptual Studies at UVA, when he read his book and looked at the research, his conclusion was that reincarnation is the most likely explanation. So you have the book editor of JAMA saying that reincarnation appears to be a real phenomenon and almost no one heard about it. Almost no one, especially within the academic community, heard about it. And the methodology, the way that they research this is so rigorous. It's so meticulous. You only need to spend a day at UVA, which is what I did, and look at these files, look at these case studies to understand the amount of effort these very intelligent people, you know, these are not mad scientists working out of their mom's basement.
Right.
These are very bright people working at the University of Virginia who have spent a lifetime studying various strains of science, whether it be psychology or chemistry or neuroscience. You know, they have put in a lifetime of work to learn how the world works. And they have concluded, without question, that the evidence for reincarnation is incredibly strong. And so given the rigorous nature of their study, of their studies and their research, it should not be shameful for any scientist, no matter of what level, to say, you know what, I want to go look at that research. I want to take a look at this stuff. And you know what, I read it, and I'm going to come out and say, this appears to be a well-done study to me. But right. It's like almost impossible to get mainstream scientists to come out and say that. And so that's what I'm trying to do, is take away the stigma in whatever way that I can so that we can open up the conversation more.
Yeah, I agree. And the more the conversation, you know, the more people are going to be, you know, open, to, you know, to at least questioning, you know, I mean,
right.
And not completely blocked off. So, gosh, we're getting down toward the end of the show, Mike, but I wanted to ask, what do you think your dad would, how you would react to Love Dad?
I like to think about that because my dad was such a very humble man, you know, in his life. You know, it was hard to get him in front of the camera, for instance. We don't have a whole lot of pictures of him because he just wasn't comfortable with the spotlight. Everything was always about everyone else in his life. So I'm sure, you know, thinking about his face on millions of screens all over the world, I imagine him red-faced, you know, hiding in a corner on the other side, given all of this attention. Right. However, my dad, being the man that he was, nothing would have brought him more joy than the thought that his story and his ability to reach back through the veil to us after all of the great effort that it's now clear to me that he put in, to know that that story is out in the world and potentially bringing comfort to people who might be grieving, nothing would make my dad happier than to think that he could be helping people that he'd never even met by his story being shared. And that's what the that's what the book is for. And, you know, that's really why I wrote it. It's a middle of the road book. You know, it's meant for people who maybe have not thought a whole lot about this before and are on the skeptical side, but at least open to listening to the information that's out there. Because, you know, these things that happened to us were so incredible, and it so changed our lives and added such joy to our lives that it didn't feel fair to keep the story to myself. You know, it honestly just didn't feel fair. I thought if the universe has this in it, if this really is happening in it, people deserve to know about it, or at least the information should be out there for people who want it. And so nothing brings me greater joy than thinking about my dad, hopefully feeling the impact that his love has had, and how that is now spreading to people that he'd never even met.
Yeah. I got that sense of that humble nature, but also just so happy that you're talking about him every day. that connection is strong. You know, that connection is strong. And, you know, and that that I would think would be a joy for him.
Yeah, so strong. I mean, I now feel him. I now feel him as though he's actually sitting beside me. I mean, sometimes I'll be driving along, and the sensation is so strong that I'm actually surprised when I reach over and don't feel his shoulder in the car beside, you know, in the passenger seat. It's been a true blessing. This is all a gift from my dad, and I thank him every single day for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mike, I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation today. Thank you for talking to us about your dad and your book.
Thank you, Robert. It's been a real pleasure being with you. Thank you for having me.
Mine as well. And also do want to let everybody know that MikeAnthony.com. You can also connect with him through Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, and he has links, icons to that at the top of his webpage. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Until we meet again. Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Remember, our show is available as a free podcast from Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. To follow our show, visit our homepage at byteradio.me and select the platform you use most. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at byteradio.me. Until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.